On today's episode of The Good Word with Goodwill, Jarrett Greenberg joins us to discuss the issues plaguing the Milwaukee Bucks, Adam Silver talking Draymond out of retirement, the Spurs building bad habits, and do the Lakers have enough around LeBron James? All that and maybe a little bit more on today's episode of The Good Word.
Good Word with Goodwill on Yahoo Sports. Ball don't lie. And here is Vince Goodwill.
Welcome to The Good Word. My name is Vincent Goodwill, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. We are part of the Ball Don't Lie Network. Get us wherever you get your podcast. We are, of course, also on YouTube, where if you are looking at us, you are seeing the face of my guest today, Jarrett Greenberg, host and reporter for NBA TV, a sideline reporter for the NBA on TNT. In case you've ever wondered, why doesn't the NBA have a NFL Red Zone-like channel? Jarrett Greenberg hosts NBA Crunch Time, the league's only whip-around show that takes you to the biggest moments of the night as they happen live. Catch Crunch Time on Wednesday nights exclusively on the NBA app starting at 8:30 Eastern. Jarrett, how you doing, my man?
I'm good. How are you? You're all excited. Are you like going retro like it's 1991? Like do you even want to talk basketball these days with your Lions?
Oh no, they're not my Lions. I quit that. I quit that. I'm happy
that you're back on the
Lions
wagon.
Fans. Yeah. But I will say this, the people who bought Detroit Rams gear when Matthew Stafford went over there to, you know, claim to have like dual residency. Yeah. Oh, baby, y'all got some choices to make this weekend. That's what I think.
Oh, man.
Are you a Giant? You a Giants fan, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So are you on like this? We need a new quarterback thing.
Oh, yeah. We need a new quarterback thing.
Okay. Well, look, from what I've seen on the mocks, the quarterbacks, it could be like four in the top 10. Yeah. So you guys could be in pretty good shape, right?
Yeah. I know we're definitely, somebody's hitting skip right now. Can we go ahead 30 seconds? Can we get ahead? Like we're pissing people off right now.
No, we're not. No, we're not. People come for me and they figure out that you're here. Don't you worry about it, all right? But of course, with Jarrett, here we're going to bounce around the entire league. And if you are listening to us on Monday afternoon, you've probably seen the news already. Former Warriors GM Bob Myers has been hired by the Washington Commanders to help with their new ownership in overhauling the organization. That's not just hiring a coach. That is reshaping everything there. And we talked about a little bit before we came on here, Jarrett. You know, will he still be the boogeyman in the NBA? I say yes.
But what do you mean? Also, why do you call him the boogeyman? Let's get into that.
Why do I call him the boogeyman? If you're an executive of a team in the NBA and you're underwhelming and, you know, you don't want to be looking over your shoulder, there's Bob Myers with four championship rings saying, let me just sit and chill and wait for the next best possible position while still being on TV, while helping out over there in the NFL. Absolutely.
Gotcha.
You don't see it that way?
No, I was just curious. I didn't know if there was more to it.
No. It's nothing specific.
Because I think what this move shows mm-hmm. is even predating his tenure as the architect of a dynasty, he was an agent. And you form relationships with ownership groups first and foremost when you're an agent. So I think this is a deep-rooted move by Josh Harris, who owns the 76ers and the Devils, and now is the owner of the Washington Commanders. And I think he recognizes a dude who is as connected in the sports world as anybody and has a track record of building a culture. Up until very recently, there were very little questions about who the best organization top to bottom in the NBA was, mm-hmm. which led to championships, mm-hmm. right? Obviously, there were little issues here and there, but not much got out of the Warriors organization. And everything from ownership to management to coaches to players were in lockstep for an 8-year period, a 10-year period. And that was all driven by Bob Myers and his ability to connect people.
You know what else helps? When you have Stephen Curry in his prime, when you have Kevin Durant coming in free agency, I think you're absolutely right. I do think there was a mystique about the Golden State Warriors. For people who don't know, up until, you know, this whole Steph Curry thing really blew up, nobody knew that the Warriors were in a top 10 market and were going to be able to cultivate a history. They were kind of one of these bottom rung teams that nobody thought about as being NBA royalty. And Bob Myers played a huge part in developing that culture. And as we've seen this season, Bob Myers got out while the getting was good. Okay. Cause nothing is going right for that organization. You got Klay Thompson getting out. I mean, say you got Klay Thompson approaching free agency. You got Steve Kerr. His contract is up. Like, a lot of things could be changing, and Bob Myers could have just been the first person to get off that.
No question. Let me give you my favorite Warriors tidbit.
Okay.
Going into their dynasty, leading into it, only the LA Clippers had more appearances in the NBA draft lottery than the Warriors, entering the Warriors' run. And there's not a single person in the media who champions the Steph Curry is underappreciated club more than me. So you're going to have a hard time arguing with me about this, because I'm with you on you need that guy to lead everything. But you also need the right pieces around that guy to continue to make things go, right? And I just think, like, you know, the one thing I go back to, and people may poo-poo this, but there's not a lot of organizations that would have handled it the same way as the Warriors. Remember when Steve Kerr was going through a lot of his medical issues earlier in this run? Like, Bob Myers was the one who was making it really okay for Steve Kerr to go on and do what he needed to do to get right, and putting the right people around Steve Kerr on the bench, behind the bench, in the video rooms, you know, all that, to make sure that this would move on seamlessly. And yes, Steph Curry was the biggest reason why he was able to, but there was a culture built there. And I think leaning on that experience is certainly going to be what's going to be asked of Bob Myers in Washington.
Look, you know who else is part of that ownership group of Washington? Irvin Magic Johnson. Mm. So there's a lot of, you know, the UCLA ties and connections. Bob Myers, of course, played at UCLA.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned earlier, a big-time agent for a number of years with a number of connections, well-liked and well-connected throughout sports. And that transcends the NBA, and people understand successful people can be successful in different environments. So I think that's really good on Washington, because we don't think of them as being an organization that has done things the right way, even, you know, across sports, you know, just going through the name fiasco and everything else. So that's a pretty interesting hire, a great hire for them. We're curious to see how all of that plays out. Now let's get to the league. Jared Greenberg, I saw Victor Wembanyama and Giannis going head up last week in San Antonio. You were there. Milwaukee came away with the win in probably one of the most exciting games of the season. I didn't come away with a great feeling about the Bucks. I haven't had a great feeling necessarily about the Bucks this entire year. Like, they've won games. They're 25-11. They have a top three offense, even though it feels like they leave a lot of good things on the table. That defense is not good. Adrian Griffin, first year head coach. You always hear questions about first year head coaches taking over contending teams with championship expectations. It's a weird sort of brew there. It feels like, Jared, they are at least a personnel move away or a shift in how they do things away from the Boston Celtics. The Celtics look like a machine. Mm. I talked to someone the other day around the league who's also seen the Bucks recently and said the Bucks look like a second round team. And that was at least surprising to me, because basically it just looks like they don't have good habits that are going to formulate during the playoffs. What do you see with the Bucks?
No, I think that last line really sticks out, because we've seen time in and time out in this league, and it's funny how we have like short-term memory loss year in and year out about this, that there are regular season teams and then there are playoff teams, and it's sometimes you get a mix of both, and sometimes you're one or the other or neither. And for me, I agree. Like, it's so weird that we're talking about a Bucks team this way, and maybe we're wrong, right? Maybe a team that is 25-11 and is in second place in the East should get more respect, but it just feels like they've won on some of their talent. They've won with circumstance. The game I was at on Thursday, the Bucks and Spurs, Vegas had the game at a 9.5-point spread going in, and I was stunned that it was single digits. I was convinced that this Milwaukee team would run through San Antonio, particularly on the heels of what the Bucks were on, which was getting swept in a back-to-back against what appears to be their Achilles heel right now, the Indiana Pacers.
Right.
It just felt like a team that good would have a certain motivation to cleanse their palate of what just happened against the Pacers and take advantage of a really bad team in the Spurs. And we can get to the Spurs, like people thinking that they should be better than they are. Like, I don't get that either. But I think when you talk to people around the Bucks, there is this surface level of, we're really happy. I think we need to acknowledge where we are. We've wanted for years to have better fourth quarter and clutch time abilities. We now have that with the options, obviously, of Dame first and foremost. Middleton's coming on, and you look at Middleton's metrics, he is getting so much better as the season's moving on, and then some other options. With that said, in speaking to people around the Bucks, I would imagine you're going to start to see a consolidation of what their rotation is, to really determine, because we have now 1 month from today, exactly 1 month until the NBA trade deadline. Mm-hmm. They need to determine what their next move is. And if you look at the Bucks' track record, nearly every year in this 4-week period heading into the deadline, they make at least one move.
Mm-hmm.
They will be getting Jay Crowder back within the week. We could see Crowder either Saturday or Sunday, or if he's not ready for that back-to-back, he'll play the following day, whether it's Tuesday or Wednesday that they play next. But they need to shore up their defense. Listen, I think the Bucks made a smart move in sacrificing their defense for their offense. I think in today's NBA, offense wins championships, not defense. But you're in a point right now where the Bucks need to be able to make some key stops.
Right.
And I don't know if this rotation, the way currently constituted, is capable of that. Their perimeter defense is atrocious. And I've been surprised. Maybe it was a product of the other four guys on the court. Maybe we need to give Mike Budenholzer and Darvin Ham and Charles Lee, guys who are on that staff, a little more credit. Because Giannis does not look like the individual defender to me this season that I thought he was during his time under Mike Budenholzer. I think their defense is going to be a problem, and I would be almost stunned if, in addition to getting Jay Crowder back, they don't make another move. But that's just the beginning of it with the Bucks, Vinny. That's just the tip of the iceberg. To say that their defense is their biggest problem right now, I think, would be kind of overlooking the obvious.
Okay, so now you're leading the witness, and the witness is you. So I'm not going to treat you as a hostile witness, but I will ask you, Jared, because you set a mouthful there. Before I get to that question, I will say this. We expect Giannis to be this sort of all-encompassing being. Yeah. And history tells us that a player going to year 10 with the type of wear and tear that Giannis has on his body, the nicks and bruises that he has, you can't expect him to be this two-way force all the time.
Right.
Even, you know, Hakeem Olajuwon wasn't the defender, you know, going past year 10 that he was in year 10. Kobe Bryant, there was going to be slippage. LeBron James, that was certainly not the height of his height past year 10. Giannis is right in that sweet spot where he's going to be as good as he's going to be, and then there's going to be a little bit of a drop-off where he can rev it up at times. And that's just on the defensive end. On the offensive end, it's a little bit different because he's trying to share space with Damian Lillard, who needs to run more spread pick and rolls, who needs to have the freedom to launch from 30 feet. But Dame is also getting exposed on the defensive end, especially at the point of attack. And you mentioned Chris Middleton, right? Chris Middleton is used to having secondary possessions to run pick and roll on the side with Giannis. Dame is taking those possessions. Middleton's trying to find his way. Should he be a weak side guy where you get the swing and he attacks the closeouts? Yeah. Okay, if that happens, cool. But you also mentioned the defense, Jared. Point of attack. That's Dame. Could that be Jay Crowder when he comes back? But also, like, this is an older team. Like, they have a lot going on. Like, can I see this team get into the finals? I can squint and see it. I don't know if I can see it right now with the personnel that they have, with some of the things that you hear behind the scenes that you're not quite sure about. But considering you said the defense is the tip of the iceberg, Jared, what is their biggest issue?
An overall identity, an overall way of understanding what success looks like. When Giannis, after losing to Houston the other night, goes through a litany of where we need to be better top to bottom, and good on Giannis for making it as much about the coaching staff as it is about him, making a joke about the equipment manager and making it about everyone else in that room. Good on you. That's good leadership. That's different leadership than LeBron, who's just sitting there pouting saying we suck, right? That's galvanizing everybody and making yourself as accountable as the 15th man, as the trainer, as the equipment manager, as the coach. But right now, for as good as this offense is, I think there's a lot of people around the NBA looking around saying, A, it could be a lot better.
Yes.
And B, if you give us a 7-game series and 48 hours in between games to prep for it, we can lock you down. We can lock this offense down because it's predictable. It's not dynamic. And listen, by no means do I try and come off as an X's and O's expert. That's why I work with a lot of former great players, current Hall of Famers, to lean on them. And a lot of the people I speak with around the NBA are stunned by the lack of putting their foot on your throat type of offense that this team could run. And you just wonder where Adrian Griffin is in this process. Where is he in the leadership standpoint of saying, here's how I want to run things? It feels as if Adrian Griffin wants to empower a couple of future Hall of Famers to make a lot of decisions. But ultimately, there needs to be a voice, a singular voice that does that. Now, listen, we've seen it time and time again, and we've seen it, I'm sure, from Wilt Chamberlain through Bill Russell to Michael Jordan to Larry Bird to now with LeBron. If the superstar wants something done, they have the voice and the authority to do that within a team, within a huddle, within a locker room, fine. But ultimately, there needs to be, like, there was a big deal made a couple of weeks ago of, in a huddle, Adrian Griffin's drawn up a play for Damian Lillard, and Giannis takes the clipboard and says, no, it's Chris Middleton. And Adrian Griffin said, you know, applauded that and said how great this is. And Middleton hit a couple of clutch shots and they won a big game, and that was good. But right now it feels like the players are running the team. And you just have to wonder how much stems from what went down in preseason, where Terry Stotts left. It was strange. It was weird.
Yes.
And I'm sure you and I have heard a lot of different stories about how that went down, why that went down. We don't need to relitigate that story.
Right.
To me, I think there's a lot of blame to go around equally in that situation. But the bottom line is there's not a lot of people on that bench right now that have the experience of dealing with this caliber of player at a high level management type of situation.
Yep.
And you just have to wonder if this team full of veterans with a, by the way, full of veterans, but a bunch of young guys that are being asked to play big roles because of how top heavy their salary structure is. Like, this team is thirsty for somebody to grab this roster and say, this is our identity and here's how we're going to achieve it. And this will equal success in the playoffs.
That is so interesting because you look at this team, and I'm not a person that believes, Jared, that a team with championship aspirations can just middle around during a regular season and then all of a sudden in the playoffs, boom, we're going to try something new that nobody has ever seen before.
Right.
And we're going to get it right, and we're going to catch you all by surprise, and we're just smarter than you. Nobody's smarter than anybody. There's teams that are better than you. There's teams that do things better than you. They have better processes, but you're not going to catch anybody by surprise in this NBA, right? I'm not saying Adrian Griffin has to be Eric Spoelstra on the sidelines, who I think is the best coach in the game, and is the best coach by a long shot. But when you're talking about identity, when you're talking about who we are, you do have to, there's a level of, yes, player ownership, right? And there was a story out a few weeks ago about Bobby Portis going off in the locker room, you know, imploring for leadership. Sometimes you have to be in charge, right? As much as this can be a Giannis-led locker room and a Dame-led locker room, and those guys have bona fides. Those guys are more accomplished on the floor than you are in your spot. And you have to walk that fine line because this is Giannis's organization. This is his franchise. This is his city. That is his arena. Everything that exists in Milwaukee, that Beer District, is there because of him. But there also has to be some give and take. It has to be some partnership. I'm not saying that that doesn't exist. I'm saying that those are the situations that are a little more ideal that can bear championship fruit. I'm not sure if it does exist there. It might not. But to me, Giannis's usage is still a little high considering you have Damian Lillard on your team. And maybe that's a function of Chris Middleton being in and out. Even the game that you were at, he played early, didn't play late. It was the front end of a back-to-back, so they were trying to make sure that, you know,
back end of a back-to-back.
Right, or back end of the back-to-back, excuse me. You were trying to make sure that you fulfilled all of your, you know, sort of league obligations and everything else. Do you think, because I'm with you, I believe the Bucks are going to be heavy in the trade market in the next month or so. How do you see things playing out? Whether it's, do you think they're going after another wing? Do you think they go after another big? Remember, they were playing Brook Lopez, you know, up on the screen earlier in the season, and Brook was like, no, I became the player that I am now playing and dropping. They switched to drop, and it helped their defense a little bit more, but they're still 19th in defense. What do you see that they will wind up looking for? Is it another wing, or is it someone to help at the point of attack at the top of the key?
Yeah, I think... And let me just clarify something to circle back to what we said earlier. Like, there's going to be people who listen to this and go, bro, look at their record. They're fine. You've got to be smarter than that. You've got to be more nuanced than that to recognize that for a team that has nothing short of championship aspirations, wins are not wins in the regular season. Losses are not losses in the regular season. It is about how you win, how you lose, and how that then translates to the playoffs. And right now, there's very little that you're taking from these Bucks wins. Yeah, good. You're going to get home court advantage. You may be in second place. Maybe if the Celtics have a slip up, you have an opportunity to challenge for one. You're stacking wins, as you know the new buzz phrase in sports goes. But within those wins, what is the quality? What are you drawing out of that that you're saying is going to translate to the playoffs, which is a very different game? And I think the number one thing, I think they're going to have to get some versatility. That's number one. Mm-hmm. I think they need somebody who, in a game, can go out and guard Tyrese Maxey, who go out and guard
Tyrese Halliburton,
right, who can guard Donovan Mitchell, who can guard Jalen Brunson, who can guard, you know, all of the different dynamic ball handlers that we have in this league. And then there's a decision to
maybe
make.
Maybe that's Jay Crowder, right?
Yeah, I don't know if this stage you're putting Jay Crowder on a point guard, you know,
no,
for 30 minutes.
You shouldn't.
Right.
Because Dame is lunch meat, right? like Dame's best defense is his offense.
Yeah.
And here's the crazy thing. In their best five-man units, their numbers are like top 10 in the league. You know what I mean? Like they have some good metrics. And like you said, Middleton has been trending up, 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 and up. But then they have these weird games every now and again, like where, you know, they lose to Houston. Houston's a decent team, a good team, a team that's on the way up, but not a team that the Bucks should be losing to. And that's what the Giannis quote that Jared was referring to was, you know, Giannis basically saying, we have to play better, we have to be better, we have to defend better, we have to be coached better, we have to trust one another. That's like you said, Jared, calling out every single aspect of the way that we do things because this isn't good enough. And I don't know if the answer is inside the building. I think that's what you were referring to. I'm not sure if the answer for the Bucks and all what ails them is inside the building. They're dynamic enough personnel-wise to be able to win a championship. Because I don't know how much you trust the Celtics, to be perfectly honest. I don't know if the Celtics are 2-3 point dependent in a playoff series. And maybe that's what the Bucks are banking on. But I'd also be afraid of the Miami Heat if I were the Bucks too, because that's also your boogeyman. You know what I mean? Like they have questions that need to be answered personnel-wise and on the sideline.
Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head. And I think those two things are going to be handled. No matter what happens, like something has to happen. There's nobody within that Bucks building that I believe, and I have not heard this. Nobody has said this to me. This is me reading the tea leaves. So this is not a report. This is not. Do not take this out of context. But I cannot believe anybody who was part of that organization 2 years ago that won a championship is looking around feeling like this team is currently constituted, whether it's on the coaching staff, whether it's on the floor, is going to be able to replicate that type of success, particularly with a Boston, with the way Philadelphia is playing. There needs to be multiple tweaks to this before it's all said and done.
Now, we're going to move on to the Golden State Warriors. I don't know if you've seen this or heard this, but just came down with, you know, Draymond Green has been reinstated. He's going back to the Golden State Warriors after a 12-game suspension. Apparently, from Draymond Green's podcast, Adam Silver, commissioner, talked Draymond out of retirement. Draymond said, Adam, this is too much for me. I'm going to retire. Now, there's a lot there. Like, and I haven't heard exactly the full context. Jared, and of course, Jared being a TNT employee, Draymond Green is a colleague of his, in a way. Like we've seen Draymond at All-Star Weekend, you know, even, you know, because he's setting himself up for his post-playing career. Are you surprised that, I guess, Jared, the series of incidents that have happened over the past couple of years, starting with Jordan Poole, starting with the punch, and going from everything since, that Draymond Green actually verbalized saying, you know what, maybe I'm going to retire. Are you surprised to even hear that? Or does that strike you as a player just being really emotional in a moment?
Well, if I'm not an X's and O's expert, I'm certainly not a psychologist.
There we go.
Although I need a psychiatrist for myself, and that's serious. But no, it doesn't surprise me. Listen, I was covering the game where Draymond punched Nurkic and sat there as Draymond tried to tell all of us that, you know, he didn't intend to do that. That was, you know, it wasn't, it, you know, he shouldn't be punished because it wasn't the intention. I saw a guy who was in denial of someone who loses control over situations that as a adult and as a professional, he needs to be in control over. And I from day one have felt like the Warriors fumbled the bag. And maybe I need to go back to the beginning of this conversation because Bob Myers was a part of that. And maybe this was the beginning of the end for Bob Myers. I don't know. I've never spoken to him about it. But the way Golden State handled the Jordan Poole incident was as bad as anything we've seen, which is kind of ironic for us to say, talking out of both sides of my mouth about how good of an organization they've been. I will say up until that point publicly, and maybe there were other internal issues that we never saw and heard about, which is the way it's supposed to happen. They fumbled the bag on the Jordan Poole incident. Number one, the Warriors made the worst thing publicly that happened in that incident was that the video got out.
Mm-hmm.
That was not the worst thing that happened. The worst thing that happened was that two employees got into an altercation and one cheap shotted and punched out the other and then stood over him as if he wanted to go for more. That was the issue. And then there was no repercussion for it. There wasn't even a suspension. There wasn't a public admonishment of him. There wasn't, this is unacceptable. We're not going to do this. We're not going to stand for this. At no cost of anything else, we're not going to do this. Wins are not important than workplace safety, than respect for one another. That was atrocious the way the Warriors handled it. And you could see the steps of how Draymond continued to believe he could get away with anything and everything, lose control of himself time and time and time again. I'm not going to try and diagnose him. I don't know if there's more going on.
Right.
But I will say, when you continue to be empowered to do things that society sees as wrong and getting paid top dollar for it without any consequence, why then would you stop? And I'm not trying to take the blame away from Draymond. It is certainly all on his shoulders.
Right.
So him to say he considered retirement, maybe this was a point of reflection that he needed where he said, maybe I can't control all of this. Maybe I don't have the ability to stop in these moments of losing my mind, blacking out, whatever it is. I don't know. So maybe if he can't prevent those situations from happening in the future, maybe he does need to step away from the game. Maybe it's best for his mental health and for the safety, and I'm not kidding about this, for the safety of others around him.
Yeah, I think there's a lot there. And like you said, we're not going to be armchair psychologists here. But, you know, it was the start of something. What you endorse, right?
Yes.
And that's what tacitly you could say the Golden State Warriors were doing with Draymond Green as far as the Jordan Poole stuff. And I understand it's easy to point the finger at, hey, the video got out. If you guys didn't see the video, you guys wouldn't feel a certain way. Steve Kerr, of course, having played for the Portland Trail Blazers and Chicago Bulls, has probably seen a lot of things. And it probably didn't move him as much. But those were seeds of a larger problem that were birthing right before his very eyes and the eyes of that Golden State dynasty. It created, rather you could say, a schism between the young players and the old guys. What side are you on?
Right.
And there was Jordan Poole and Moses Moody and Jonathan Kuminga, and then you got Draymond Green, who's supposed to be their OG, who's supposed to be their vet. So that it made it a little squeamish. And it, to Draymond's credit, he admitted it prevented the way that he could lead that team that season because he couldn't lead in the way that he had known himself to be. And oftentimes, you win a championship, everything you do becomes endorsed because, well, we won a championship. Right. Even if it's destructive behavior, it's often excused because of the end result, not being, let's just say, fruit of a poisonous tree. You know what I mean? And those things often come to bear well after, and winning cures a lot of those ills. And now you have Draymond, you know, in the first year of an extension, looking at the franchise, the way that the franchise is, it's not the same franchise without Bob Myers being there. Steve Kerr, as much as he and Draymond bump heads, is in the last year of a contract. Steph Curry's there, yes, but they're going to be going through some type of transition. This isn't the same NBA. So I'm very curious how Draymond's return actually affects. Now, he's going to return. He's going to play, right, Jared. But you got Moses Moody and Jonathan Kuminga. Those two guys have not gotten the playing time that many people have hoped for, considering, you know, lottery picks, transition of leadership, transition of eras, all that stuff. Chris Paul just broke his hand. I think that's his fifth hand surgery of his career.
That's remarkable.
He's out 4 to 6 weeks. This is what happens when you get old. You wind up getting hurt just having a ball hit your hands. You know, like this is what happens. This is literally what happens when you get old. This is unfortunate.
Drink some milk.
I don't think it's milk, Jared. Okay. All right. But Once again, the trade deadline is coming up. Chris Paul's out 4 to 6 weeks.
Right.
That hinders your ability to really put him in the trade talks. It's not impossible, but it hinders it a little bit. What are their long-term prospects that you see for them? Because they're 11th in the West and Utah's about to catch them. That's out of the play-in.
Well, not only that, like, the West is so competitive. I'm not going to say so good. I'm going to say so competitive.
It's better than it's been the last few years.
Well, regardless, it's tight, right? There's a lot of teams stacked together.
Yes.
Who's falling out for the Warriors? And we'll get, I don't know if we're going to get to the Lakers. Who's falling out for those two teams to move up, right? That's also the problem, is that it's not just you moving up, it's who's moving down. Two things. Number one, knowing Steph Curry, how good he's been. You know, it's not all that different what's going on with Golden State than the Lakers. Steph Curry has to be at an MVP level just to give his team a chance to win.
Yep.
Which is a lot to ask for a guy in his mid to late 30s.
Yep.
Who has to score the way he scores, which is so active, so aggressively. I wouldn't waste a year of Steph Curry, knowing what's coming down the pike with the salary cap, knowing that you're going to be making some significant changes, whether you know what those changes are or not, beyond this year. I would go all in this year. I'd make it an effort. I would not waste a year of Steph Curry. But number two, going back to Draymond, one of the other things that has always intrigued me about the Warriors and getting to spend as much time as I have around them is I feel like in multiple seasons, I've been in a room with Steve Kerr or players and saying Draymond is moving closer and closer to either the technical foul automatic suspension or the flagrant foul automatic suspension.
Yeah.
What is that line with him, right? And I've asked that question multiple different ways in multiple seasons to Steve Kerr, to other players about Draymond. And the answer you get from everybody year in and year out is Draymond needs to play that way in order to be who he is on the court. And I've always felt coming out of those conversations that that is embracing and encouraging that behavior and not asking more of Draymond. So if Draymond, we're going to see, it's going to be put to the test right now. If he's more of a calm demeanor, not going at officials every single play, not taking cheap shots at players, can he still be arguably the most versatile interior defender in the NBA while being the head of the snake of one of the more dynamic offenses and the offense that set the tone for the rest of the NBA to play the way they've been playing for the last 5, 6, 7 years? Is he capable of playing at that level while being someone who can control his emotions by being someone who doesn't throw a temper tantrum at least once a game? Can he be that way? And I think those are big questions.
I think this is what happens when you get old. When you can't physically rev it up the way that you used to, and you have to resort to those antics.
That's unfair because I think Draymond, that's giving him an out. He's been doing this for years. Like, for people just to look at the last year or just post the Jordan Poole punch and say this. No, we have seen Draymond throw temper tantrums on the court for years. And the Warriors have embraced that and said he needs to do that. He needs to do X in order to be Y. And to me, that's not made sense. He's an adult and he's a professional. Can we not throw temper tantrums on the court and still be great? And if you can't, well, then maybe you shouldn't be playing basketball.
Well, Draymond is one of those dudes who plays on the edge. And we know that.
But the edge has been jumped over time and time again.
Yes, he's a habitual line stepper.
Yes. I am
habitual line stepper. Totally with you on that. It's a weird dynamic. And he's played that way for so long. And the impulses are the impulses. That's where we sit. But I did want to get to you, especially because we're not quite at time, but I just want to make sure we have enough time, Jared. You got to see Big Vic last week. Also, had some ridiculous plays, And the numbers are the numbers. The numbers are crazy. I saw a stat yesterday that said in his first, 36 games or whatever it is, he has more blocks than Dikembe Mutombo, Alonzo Mourning. And in his first 36 games, he has more three-pointers than Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. Now, the three-point number is a little skewed because we're in a three-point league, but factor in this guy 7'4", taking those shots. I am of the mind that no matter how bad the Spurs are, I can vote for him for Rookie of the Year. I'm not putting the Spurs in their losing on him individually. I look at him being as dynamic as he is. He has not underwhelmed. He has lived up to the hype and probably exceeded it in some way. But from the Spurs standpoint, how do you see this season? Because some people are looking at the losing and saying they shouldn't be losing this way. They're tanking tacitly and everything else. But I get the feeling, Jared, that you feel a little bit differently.
Yeah, I don't think it's a very good basketball team. It's not constructed very well. It was not constructed with Victor Wembanyama in mind, right? This is the same roster that got in position to be able to draft Victor Wembanyama last year.
Right.
I will say that I think we've started to see, first of all, let me just go back to the Rookie of the Year voting, because I feel very strongly about this too. And I hopefully have the honor once again, as I have for almost the last decade, to be a voter. If I have that privilege once again this year, I feel the Rookie of the Year does not get weighted and graded the same way as the MVP. And I think a lot of people do that.
Yes, they do.
Impact on winning, impact on roster, and all that stuff. To me, the Rookie of the Year, and I'll say this, I'm open. I have not decided where my vote is going nearly halfway through the season. I think we still should have an open mind that there could be two or three guys that have the ability to win this thing. With that said, the Rookie of the Year is not who's projected to be the best, who will have the best career. It is who had the best rookie season in the NBA.
Right.
And right now we're seeing two guys in particular, Wemby and Chet Holmgren, do things that we've never seen before. Now, Chet has been fortunate that he's surrounded by a better team. One may say he's benefited from sitting out his true rookie year,
mm-hmm.
But the rules are the rules, and he is eligible for Rookie of the Year, and he will be on my ballot, whether he'll be on the one spot, the two spot, or the three spot. There has been a significant shift over the last 2 weeks in San Antonio about how the organization views the here and now and the future. Prior to the last 2 weeks, the Spurs had been very conscious and almost cuddling of everyone 1 through 17 on that roster to make sure they were feeling included, make sure they were doing all the things. They have recognized, and maybe it took them a little longer than it should have, that this team is not very good, and there will be very few pieces around Victor Wembanyama that are on the roster now that will be there in the future when this team eventually turns it around and becomes a playoff team, finds success, becomes competitive, and has the ability maybe to challenge. They hope for championships. Moving forward this year, and you may laugh at this and say, well, this has been the case from Jump Street. And I will tell you, it has not been. Moving forward, it is all about Victor Wembanyama. If you are not going to be someone that this organization can grow with Victor Wembanyama, you are not going to be a part of this organization. And again, that was not the thinking from October, November, and most of December. This organization was evaluating everybody on an equal playing field, saying, who do we have the ability? How do we learn what the best is around Victor? Who can be a part of this? Everything from your body language to your nonverbal communication to your support of your teammates. If you're not up and clapping on the bench, that will be graded and evaluated.
Right.
Who is growing with Victor Wembanyama is the key moving forward. And who gets the shots? We saw this time and time again. And I'm not calling out guys. I'm just stating some facts. There were games when Jeremy Sochan or Devin Vassell or Keldon Johnson were getting more shots than Victor Wembanyama. And that was considered okay because we're seeing how this thing goes. Moving forward, It must be Victor Wembanyama who gets the bulk of the offense. Who, if you see him in the post, give him the ball. And that's the way it is going to be moving forward. And it probably should have been that way from the beginning, but it wasn't.
Yeah, that's the way it should have been. And you're right. And before you go any further on Victor, the name of Victor Wembanyama on this here podcast is Big Slim. That is what we are calling him. We're not calling him Wimby here. Okay, that sounds too much like Gumby. All right, we call him Big Slim here. All right, and everything should revolve around Big Slim. Jared, I was at Victor's first game against Dallas, opening week, and I saw all those dudes that you mentioned. They were looking around like, "Oh, the TNT cameras are here." Everybody said, "It's like Beetlejuice. It's showtime." That's how they were kicking it, right? Yeah. They were like, "It is my time to get these shots up." And for the most part, you know, Keldon Johnson's gotten paid, right? I'm not sure if Jeremy Sohan's gotten paid. I don't think he's gotten paid. But Devin Vassell gotten paid. All those dudes got paid before the start of the season in the effort, I believe, to make those guys feel secure about everything that was coming with Big Vic, so they wouldn't have to worry about, I got to get my numbers because I got free agency coming up and I want to get paid and I want the Spurs to take care of me, like that sort of thing. I think this is sort of a natural order. If you come in saying everything is about Big Vic, then there is a level of resentment from some of the guys. If you let natural order run its course and you let guys see how good Big Slim is, they'll come to the conclusion on their own. We're not going to go anywhere unless he's featured. And if I want to be here, then I'm going to have to abide by the new world order. And the new world order is Big Slim. So I get why people have sort of said Greg Popovich has done as bad of a job as Bill Belichick. I would say ease up on that. I would say they've had a large plan to get this bad, to get this player, and now you start moving up, presumably, right? But they haven't gotten all of their draft picks wrong. All those guys that you mentioned are productive NBA players. Do they fit with Big Vic? We're not sure yet, but that's year is about.
They don't fit, which is why they're as bad as they are. What are they right now? The Spurs are entering Monday's action. San Antonio is 5-30. Right, they're you may see that they have capable NBA players, talented NBA players.
Yes,
they're not a well-oiled, constructed roster.
No,
right? It doesn't make sense what they're trying to do. I would say this one criticism I would have of the San Antonio organization this year, and it's interesting.
They don't have a point guard.
That's a huge part of it. Is and the fact that they have Brett Brown on this coaching staff, to me, makes this even more mind-boggling, because Brett Brown saw the depths of this. Listen, nobody in the Spurs organization thought they would be good.
Right.
They thought they would be better than five wins halfway through the season, but nobody thought that they would be good. But once you start, particularly with young players, without much leadership in the locker room, which the Sixers didn't during Brett Brown's tenure, and there's very few experienced guys that have won at a high level in the Spurs locker room. You know, you think about some of the veterans, Jetty Osman. Okay, we're on some of those Cavs teams. I don't know how vocal Jetty is. Doug McDermott and Zach Collins are your leaders, are your veterans, not leaders, but veterans. When you have young players who are getting compensated at a very high level, which nothing wrong with that, that's fine, but you are basically telling them that losing now is fine because we have a long-term goal, you often have trouble in this league, once you are ready to start winning, to change habits, to change mindset. You don't just flip the switch. It's still an issue that Philadelphia is trying to come out of. They're still at times trying to change habits of Joel Embiid and others who were there during the depths of the process, where it was perfectly acceptable to lose a game today to gain a win down the road, which is a draft pick, which is whatever.
Right.
The Spurs are not just losing. They're losing badly. And we saw it the other night against Milwaukee. That was a rare close game for them, and they didn't know how to close out the game. We saw it again the other day, on yesterday, on Sunday, where Victor Wembanyama had a shot late in the game to make a good play and against Cleveland, and he didn't know what to do with the basketball late in the game.
Yep.
You just have to hope, and you have to be coaching them up, that these habits cannot stick, cannot become habits. You got to stop them before they become habits. That's what would scare me about this team, is that once you give a red shirt year to this organization, what is your plan to get out of that next year and years beyond?
Well, I will say this,
veteran point guard would help.
Absolutely. I will say this because I am in Detroit, and Detroit is in the same tier as the San Antonio Spurs, minus having a Victor Wembanyama, 3-33 team or whatever the hell they are, 3-35, something like that. And I've said this before, and I'll say this forever. Once you get losing in your building, it is hard to get it out, regardless of what the goal is for the losing. Like, people say, oh, the Spurs got Tim Duncan. Yeah, that was actually a 10-year stretch where they were winning 50 games every year.
Right.
David Robinson hurt his back. And then, boom, you get Tim Duncan. You had 1 year in a 10-year stretch. That is not what the Spurs are doing now. It's a little bit different. You're having to build from the ground up. And unless you have players in that locker room who have experienced winning and who can teach and mold and still be able to play. Like, you can have guys in the locker room who've won before, but unless they're playing, unless you're able to guide from the floor, it's a little harder to reach players that way. Last thing before we go, Jared. Lakers and Clippers played last night. For whatever reason, the tide has turned on this so-called rivalry. The Clippers have lost, I think, two straight to the Lakers after winning maybe like 12 straight that it's been. LeBron was fantastic. Anthony Davis was fantastic. Kawhi Leonard sat a couple of minutes during a critical stretch. He didn't have a great night. He looked a little tired, a little ragged.
Oh my God.
What is it, Jared? What is Kawhi Leonard has played most games this year? He's only missed like a handful of games. He's still in the running for postseason awards, actually, which is remarkable. If you guys don't see Jared Greenberg's face, Jared looks exasperated at the mere mention of Kawhi Leonard.
How about Ty Lue's face coming out of his face last night that it was his decision to not play Kawhi Leonard in that pivotal stretch of about 2 minutes last night? No way. No way. There's no way that was Ty Lue's decision. And what we're doing with these players, and again, I'm not an X's and O's expert. I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a medical professional. But the fact that we have empowered people to say an extra 30 seconds, like we were talking about a minute of basketball last night with multiple timeouts and stoppages to rest and reset and get out of your red zone or whatever it is, that this dude couldn't be on the floor for an extra minute of basketball? That was awful.
Jared, you know, you're not a psychologist, but I feel like I am putting this you on therapy. The couch. Yeah, I feel like you're on the couch right now.
I do have some positive things to say about this game, though.
Do you? Go ahead. Let it off, because you've only given off the venom so far.
Lakers played with some energy. They played with some fight. Like, there was a couple of instances where they were ready to, you know, get into it a little bit. I'm trying to remember that one incident that happened last night, who it was. But, like, there felt like there was some desperation in the Lakers last night. I just don't know if their roster is good enough to do what LeBron and Darvin Ham want to do.
It's an interesting point you bring up about LeBron and Darvin Ham. Darvin Ham, according to a story on The Athletic, there's been a growing disconnect between Darvin Ham and the players. The players are not happy with their roles. I don't know if the players are good enough around LeBron and Anthony Davis. And everybody in their mama said, you know what, y'all? Rob Pelinka had the moves of the offseason. He shored up everything around LeBron and AD. Two things for me, guys. The season does not start where it ended. Right. Everybody looked at the Lakers as a Western Conference finalist team that shored up some things. You got to start back over at zero. you don't pick up with the rhythm and the momentum that you as a club had
right.
going into that playoffs or even after that trade deadline where you had the Russell Westbrook trade chip and everything else. Secondly, if LeBron and AD are taking up such a huge chunk of possessions, those other guys aren't going to have a chance to actually feel their way through. And I get the dichotomy of it because LeBron is playing at an efficient level and Anthony Davis is playing all these games. But sooner or later, you and I both know this, those two guys will get hurt because they get hurt. And Darvin Ham is in this sort of pressure cooker where he talked about, man, I wish it wasn't so much dissection on every single substitution, every play. I'm 100% with him. I'd rather coach for a team where there is expectations compared to not, but it is a coach's job to operate from 30,000 feet. And it's probably hard for him to operate from 30,000 feet when everybody's saying, oh, you brought D'Lo in at the 9-minute mark as opposed to the 4-minute mark. Like, we got to relax just a little bit, just a wee bit. This team just isn't good enough right now, Jared. And it doesn't come down to me to Darvin Ham not being a good enough coach. I don't think this is a good enough collection of players. Right. And that's saying on a team with LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
Right. Well, a couple things there. Number one, we, and I'll throw myself into this, we as media, we more importantly as fans of the game, maybe do need to relax. But what great teams and organizations do is tune that out or find a way to give some BS answer like Bill Belichick did for years, even though we hate it, about it is what it is. You guys can talk about whatever you want to talk about. We're going to do in our building what we do. That's number one. Number two is there should be no excuses. The Lakers have not had more injuries than some other teams that are much better than them.
Right, right, right.
And I don't want to hear about that, which it feels like that's been implied and inferred a little bit. And then, yeah, I'm with you on that same bandwagon. I'm disappointed on where I don't remember where I put the Lakers. I put them somewhere top six in the West. And I felt dirty about doing it at the time. And I'm kicking myself now because I just looked at it like the number one thing. You need two things from a roster that LeBron James is on. Number one, you need three things. Number one, you need shooting.
Yes.
Who, like, you're trying to sell me on Torian Prince? If that's going to, he's not a 40% dead eye shooter.
No.
Number two, you need somebody who can take the load off of LeBron in the regular season to preserve him to be who he is capable of being in the playoffs. LeBron has had to play a playoff level LeBron just to give him his team a chance to be competitive night in, night out. And then number three, you've got to have guys who are willing defenders. And they just don't have that. They don't have any one of those three things, let alone, you know, like one of the three or two of the three. Like,
well, I would quibble with you on the second point about getting someone to take pressure off of LeBron, because LeBron will take it off of your shoulders and put it on his, even if you're capable of
leaving. Not if he develops that trust.
Yeah, but we've never seen him do that. Let's be perfectly honest. LeBron.
He trusted Kyrie. He trusted Dwayne Wade.
Yeah. And now we're with old grumpy LeBron, who has less patience than he did before.
I got to say, for as grumpy as he is now, he seemed pretty damn happy a couple of weeks ago in Vegas.
Well, we ain't in Vegas no more. And put it like this, as much as, and I'll close with this. Someone asked him last night in the post game, what do you think about the James Harden Clippers? You know what he said? You know what he said? He said, oh, you mean the Tyronn Lue Clippers?
Oh, my goodness.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Jared Greenberg. Thanks to Jared for giving us some of his time this morning. Watch Crunch Time this Wednesday exclusively on the NBA app at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time with another special edition this Saturday night on the NBA app. Thanks to producer John and the entire team that works behind the scenes.
Dan will
be back for another episode of Divine Intervention tomorrow. And I will be back for another episode this Wednesday of The Good Word. Until then, everybody be safe.